Today is October 28th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
This week, it's back to our roots. Mac and iPod in context. News from the platforms. iTunes piracy goes corporate, and AMD absorbs more than ATI's finances in a merger. Jeff, start us out.
John Johansson, best known for his DCSS application that removes copy protection from DVD movie discs, is approaching digital rights management from a completely different angle now. DVD John, as he's known, has started a company called Double Twist Ventures that will commercialize his hacks of Apple's Fair Play copy protection technology. Mr. Johansson has played a cat and mouse game with Apple Computer for some time by reverse engineering its Fair Play copy protection technology. His code was used in applications like QT Fair Use to strip the copy protection out of songs so that they could be played on portable music devices other than the iPod. Apple would release updates that broke his code, and a few days later, Mr. Johansson would release a new version that worked.
At the beginning of October, though, Mr. Johansson announced that DoubleTwist was taking a new approach. The venture's strategy is to license homegrown DRM that mimics Apple's Fair Play protection, making it possible for other digital music stores to sell songs that will play on an iPod.
Right now, the Double Twist Ventures website is scant on details, but that doesn't seem to be stopping companies from considering purchasing licenses. Apparently, at least one anonymous company has already signed on.
For whatever that bit of news is worth. Moving on, now that Advanced Micro Devices, or AMD, has completed its merger with video card maker ATI, the company said that a projected project codenamed Fusion will, by early 2009, produce chips integrating CPUs and GPUs, that's central processing units and graphics processing units, on a single slice of silicon. Merging both chips into one should lead to better power efficiency, something also important in the handheld device realm. In other words, AMD is looking to reach further into consumer electronics, where it hopes to snag a presence in cell phones, smartphones, and video game consoles.
Apple currently uses only Intel processors in its computers, although some models offer ATI graphics rather than the more prevalent NVIDIA graphics chips. The company has not yet said how the AMD-ATI merger will affect its product line.
And as is our wont, we'll give you a quick update on last week's Context Machine Fodder. Sony executives publicly apologized on Tuesday for the manufacturing issues that led to a massive recall of laptop batteries. The battery recall was issued because of the risk of overheating and potential fire hazards. To date, about 9.5 million batteries are included in the recall. Sony claims that the manufacturing flaw that led to the defective batteries has been corrected. The company also said that none of its leadership team would be resigning over the incident.
And they won't be exercising any stock options either. The company took a hard hit to its bottom line thanks in part to the recall. Profits for the quarter dropped 94%. Profits were down to 1.7 billion yen, which is about 14 million U.S. dollars for the quarter. That's down from 28.5 billion yen, or about $239 million, for the same time last year.
And with that, we'll hop into the Context Machine. So, Jeff, let's start, like we were saying before, with Double Twist Ventures. Now, people, when all of these stories pop up about someone hacked Fair Play, someone did this, someone did that, we tend to focus on the ethical issues associated with hacking. Who's the good guy, who's the bad guy? For the moment, let's set all of that aside and just try and clarify some of what actually went down here. Double Twist is going to license, it sounds, essentially a clone of Fair Play. They've cloned the Fair Play functionality, and they're going to license it to other digital media download services. So who's the customer here? It's other digital download service, but why would anyone who sells music over the internet have an interest in licensing this software that Double Twist has created?
it comes down to numbers and money. And what these other companies want is to get more of the, I hate to say it, apple pie. There you have it. They
I
want
considered
more...
laughing at that joke, but I couldn't bring myself to do it.
That's okay. I could barely bring myself to say it. Yeah, so what these other companies want is to get in on Apple's action. And the way that they think they can get in on the action is by getting in on the iPod. And this technology or code that our good friend DVD John has created gives them a way to mimic the Fairplay DRM technology that Apple uses in its songs. So then the iPod will look at the songs and think, okay, they came from Apple. I can play this music. I understand the copy protection code that's embedded.
All right. Now, when we get to the dollars and cents of doing this, this reminds me a lot. I mean, the discussion here about wanting to be able to sell songs that people can play on their iPods, that sounds a lot like the discussion people were having back when Real Networks, which has a service called Rhapsody, made the decision. They broke Fairplay. They figured out how to emulate it, essentially, and said, we're now selling iPod-compatible songs. You can buy songs from our service, and they'll play on an iPod. Compare that situation to this one. I mean, where did that situation end up versus where this one is headed?
Well, what happened with Rhapsody is exactly what you said. They created their own hack of Fairplay and were selling songs based on that. What's happening now is we have a technology that's come out of the same code base, essentially, and it puts in the markers, it looks like, so that a song will appear as if it has Fairplay copy protection in it. And that's all you need to have to trick the iPod into thinking that it's a legit copy protected song that it can play. And the songs may very well be copy protected, but with a different scheme. It's
so
just
the idea is that someone that has actually encoded their stuff with, for example, Windows Media Player or Windows Media Format copy protection, DRM, can put this additional, like you're saying, the tags, the hooks, the markers that say, hey, I'm a Fairplay protected song. And so the iPod, when it goes to read out the song, says, oh, this is an AAC song encoded in Fairplay, so I'm willing to play it, or I know how to play it.
Exactly.
And is there any reason to believe now Apple went and broke the hack that Real Networks did of Fairplay? Is there any reason to believe that Apple would be able to or would go about breaking the hack that DVD John has implemented here?
Oh, sure. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the next iTunes update includes some change to the way Apple uses Fairplay, and then it breaks what DVD John has created. It's the track record we've had all along, so I don't see any reason why that would change.
Now, in theory, it does sound a little bit harder, right? If a song, if he's done it properly and the song really looks exactly like a Fairplay song, which, of course, it may or may not, but if he's done it right, then in order for legacy iTunes songs to be able to play on an iPod, you'd have to be able to play these DVD John files, right? If he's done it perfectly.
If he's done it perfectly. Now, the ability to do that perfectly, I don't know. Maybe he has it, maybe he doesn't. But Apple has been able to do something with Fairplay so that they have legacy support, but it breaks whatever he's done anyhow. So I can see the same thing happening again here. And then a few days after Apple comes out with their update, he'll have his new version of his hack code available, and everyone will still be happy.
Fair enough. Now, let's talk about the choices here. In terms of the implementation, how likely do we think it is that people are going to sign on to this? First of all, let's back up. Let's imagine that this works, right? Imagine DoubleTwist, you know, they did it perfectly. It's going to succeed. digital music services can freely sell songs. They play on iPods. People aren't worried about Apple disabling the hack. Let's say that he's done it perfectly. Do you think more people are going to start using alternative download services beyond iTunes because of this? Is this going to open up the marketplace?
This is going to sell more iPods. That's what's going to happen. And yes, we'll see a very small increase in sales at other music services. But what will happen, I think, is that people will use the other services and they'll think, you know, this kind of sucks, all the workarounds I have to do. And they'll end up in a moment of weakness, so to speak, purchasing a song from the iTunes store, and they'll look at that and go, well, that was easy. And you'll end up getting more people buying songs in the end from the iTunes store. And even if that's not a large increase in sales for music, it will still translate into an increase in sales for iPods.
Now, you said something about the usability. Why? I mean, are we banking on the usability of the other services being worse than iTunes? What if the other music services improve? Is there any reason to believe that they will that there's something about this process that's still going to be more difficult?
The part that will be more difficult is based on the assumption that DVD John has not made a perfect replica of Fairplay. So we'll have the situation where every time Apple does an update that breaks Fairplay, he has to go back and change his code. Then it has to go out to everyone that's licensing it from him. And I'm not sure how they're going to make that work with songs people have already purchased.
All right. Now, in this alternate universe where everything works for DVD John's version of things, let's assume that people are totally satisfied with his implementation. Would anything change for the MP3 player market? We talked about the digital download services. How about alternate MP3 players? You said that this is going to help sell more iPods. Will it otherwise affect other MP3 players?
I think the bigger effect on the rest of the MP3 player market is going to come from Microsoft with their Zune player, and not from additional sales that come from iPods that people are buying, assuming that they're going to use them with services other than iTunes.
All right. Now, Apple has released no public statement on all of this having to do with this Fairplay hack. Now, obviously, if DoubleTwist fails, if everyone says, no, we don't trust this hack that you've done, we don't want to license it from you, then nothing changes for Apple. If DoubleTwist succeeds, what's at stake?
Actually, I think what's at stake is a potential market loss in the long run for the other music player company, or excuse me, the other music player service companies. And I think that ultimately we may see an issue where we have companies concerned about whether or not DVD John's technology is going to be detrimental to them, and potentially they may even be concerned that he will reverse engineer their technologies as well and license them out to other companies.
So this is, for example, Windows Media protection that you're talking about.
Sure. Yeah, and it could be, even though I don't know why anyone would want to, but it could be Sony's A-Track technology that gets reverse engineered as well. Of course, maybe if he reverse engineered that, they could find a way to make it work better so the songs don't sound like crap.
Now, I would think that the worst case scenario for Apple is that for whatever combination of factors that occur in the marketplace, it decides that it can't keep the iTunes and iPod system closed. Now, is there any reason to believe that in that circumstance, Apple would do what it can, whether it can or not, but try to break DVD John's or DoubleTwist's software and then start licensing Fairplay on its own to other download services?
If we look at this as a worst-case scenario where Apple, for whatever reason, was forced to have to do something like that, sure, that's exactly what I would do. I would break his code and then turn around to all the companies and say, all right, here's what we'll charge you for a license. hop on board or be stuck with this perpetually broken hack.
Or intermittently broken hack, at least.
Yes. Perpetually intermittently broken hack.
All right. Now, in that case, one of the issues that I can imagine showing up here with DoubleTwist is this issue of any legal proceedings, any litigation that's going to come out of this. Now, if we look for ways for litigation to happen here, the first thing that comes to mind, independent of what Apple might go suing for, if they sit on this now, does that reduce their ability to petition for any kind of injunction on what DoubleTwist is doing, or for damages on what DoubleTwist is doing, if they wait now?
Keep in mind, I'm not a lawyer, so take what I say with a grain of salt for this part. But I don't think that Apple would be in trouble from a civil case standpoint if they waited to go after DoubleTwist. And I'm basing that on the fact that a lot of the code that goes in to make Fair Play work is open source. So anyone has access to the pieces, they just don't have access to the knowledge about how Apple put those pieces together. And that's what he's had to reverse engineer. So because everything's open source and anyone can play around with this anyhow, Apple might be okay waiting, because it's not like they're having to say, oh my God, he stole all of this other proprietary information we're using, because it's based on open source. Now, I might be completely wrong, and they might be in a situation where they need to jump on it today or else lose the ability to protect Fair Play down the road. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
Fair enough. Now, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about AMD. The first question here, AMD is talking about taking ATI's graphics processing units, GPUs, and integrating them into the same chip. So a single microprocessor would have, in essence, two brains, and one brain would handle the normal functioning of the computer, and the other brain would handle the graphics functioning of the computer. The first question here, ATI graphics cards show up in other devices. They show up in PCs that have, for example, some Macs that have ATI graphics cards. Is there any reason to believe that if AMD is pursuing this unified processor, that they would stop producing standalone graphics cards?
No, I don't think that would happen at all. And the reason being is because if they were to stop making the standalone graphics cards, they're cutting out a potentially large portion of their market, because there's a lot of people out there that want to add an ATI card to their PC that uses any brand of processor chip. And then you also have the people that need to add additional graphics cards into their computers for whatever reason. Maybe they want extra monitors. Maybe they're doing high-end video work where they have to have the extra video processing, whatever. There's still going to be a really strong market for those extra video cards. And I think they would be very foolish to get out of that market.
So we have no reason to assume that those processors are going to go away, or those graphics cards are going to go away. The flip side of it, of course, is that Apple Watchers, Mac users may be sitting there saying, hey, it sounds like this could be pretty sweet, these power-saving things with the cool double-function processors or two-brain processors. I'm trying to avoid saying things like dual-core and dual-processor, because that gets confused with a different idea. But
right,
these fused processors sounds kind of cool. Is there any reason to think that Apple could not put this stuff to work, or have they committed themselves to Intel's product line of processors, or is there some opportunity for them to play these competitors off of one another?
Apple isn't the kind of company that lets himself, at least now, get boxed into a technological corner. And when they made the switch to the Intel processor, at the time, that totally made sense, because they knew what the roadmap was for Intel, and there was the name recognition and everything else that goes along with using an Intel processor. But they also have created an architecture, and by they I mean Apple, they've created an architecture that they can move to other processors fairly easily now. So to think that they wouldn't consider using an AMD processor if it was appropriate and to their advantage, well, of course they're going to do that.
So one of the values, of course, in the transition to Intel was that they put themselves into a marketplace where there are two competitors, which was not true when they were working with Motorola, IBM, and later Freescale.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in this market, they now have a lot more than two choices because they're not limited just to the processors that Intel makes or AMD makes. If they wanted to, they could port OS X so that it runs on, say, a Spark workstation. So they have a lot of options available to them now, and I'm quite certain that Apple will use that to their advantage to get the best chips at the best prices. And Intel knows that, and so they're going to be working very hard to make sure that they do what's necessary to keep Apple as a happy client.
And that will have to be the final word for this week's Context Machine. If you have questions about the news, as always, we're back to the normal thing. We're doing Context Machines again.
Hooray!
Isn't that exciting? You can email us questions, thoughts, comments, whatever. Send them to roundup@macobserver.com. And we'll start off we'll go back now to the product roundup that you've known for some amount of time, very briefly here at the end of the show. We'll actually start off this week's product roundup with a quick look at the mic I've been using on this show for the past couple of months. This is, of course, in continuation of that feature that we started last week with Jeff's Samson mic. Very briefly, and Jeff, I've talked to you about my mic a little bit. It's a Shure SM58. Now it's a dynamic mic. We talked about dynamics versus condensers. This microphone is the classic rock star mic. If you go to any club, any nightclub, and you see a singer, you know, screaming into a microphone, it's probably an SM58. They're really rugged. You can find them anywhere. I think the list price is $99, but you can find them on Craigslist or eBay or other places probably for about $50. So they're easy to find. They're directional, so the same thing that we were talking about, cardioid pattern. The pickup pattern is cardioid. You don't need any phantom power because it's a dynamic mic. I do use an audio interface. Again, I was telling people about that last week. It's this FireWire 410. You need some way to plug it into your Mac because it's not a USB microphone. And some of you may notice it's this very full sound. I really like this microphone. I really enjoy talking into it. It's not a particularly clear sound, and I tweak things like the equalization at my end to make it sound a little bit clearer when you guys hear it. But it's very sort of thick and rich, so it's kind of a nice mic for that. The one other thing to remember with a microphone, particularly a microphone like the SM58, is this thing called the proximity effect. So as I back off from the microphone, I disappear. All of a sudden, I lose all of the meat in my voice. It's, where did I go? Oh, no. And then I come back onto the mic, and I'm like there again. So,
sorry, I found that very funny, and I don't know why.
So anyway, if you want this microphone, it's a great microphone. Anyone in the world can show you how to get one, and they're not too expensive. It does require a little bit of practice to get comfy with it. So you got to hook it up, talk into it for a while, convince yourself that you know what you're doing, listen to yourself, say, oh, that sounds weird. Eventually teach your head how to stop moving. But they're nice once you get used to them. And good way to go if you do a radio-style podcast. If you're looking at doing a show where you're yammering away with other people, it's great. Or if you're in a noisy place, really good. I can leave the air conditioning on. I did a show a couple of weeks ago where the ceiling fan was on in the room. I didn't even notice until I was done because this mic just kind of doesn't pick that stuff up. So that is the SM58 for anyone who's interested.
Okay, Ricky. So compared to the Samson microphone that I'm using, the CO3U, which one do you like better as far as sound quality? And I understand that you have to compare it to my voice, so I'll take that with a grain of salt.
Well, it's an interesting question. Any condenser microphone, except for very, very expensive condenser microphones, and when I say very expensive, I mean like more than $1,000, are going to sound clearer than dynamics. They're going to have more of that high end. They're going to sound more kind of open. And so when you come through over Skype, you sound very clear. This microphone serves a different purpose. And so I can actually, just playing with the equalization, I can give your voice some of the oomph that this mic gives mine so that they sound more natural next to one another on the show. That's a very long-winded way of saying they're different. And so it's very difficult to compare them. I think that particularly compared to the way we were recording you before, you sound great coming through on that condenser mic. And it will be interesting to hear your voice if we can get you a dynamic to check out as well. It'll be interesting to hear the difference with the same voice. And next week, actually, what I'll do to give the listeners an idea, I have a Samson condenser mic that's very similar to the one that you have, except that it's not USB powered. And I'll plug that in next week and people can hear what I sound like on a condenser mic, which is definitely different. So.
Excellent. Okay. Well, then I'm going to talk about Firefox.
Right on.
All right. After a false start earlier this week, when unofficial links to Firefox surfaced, Mozilla officially released their web browser on Tuesday. Now, the new version is universal binary, and it includes a revised interface. It has built-in phishing protection and improved searching capabilities. Also includes a session restore feature, which is really nice because it will allow you to have the same windows and web pages open if you have to quit Firefox or if it crashes and you restart it. And Firefox 2.0 is free.
Tokyo Scalar Corporation has teamed up with Oregon's Bodlin Technologies to launch ProScope HR, which is a handheld USB microscope with a 1.3 megapixel imager that can capture stills, video, and time lapse with the included software. ProScope HR sells for $350, and a variety of lab kits are also available.
And Skype officially released version 2 of its online chat application on Monday. Skype 2.0 features the voice and text chat features that we've come to know from the earlier versions and also adds cross-platform video chat support. You can group chat with up to 100 users and conference call with up to 4 people and exchange files through the Skype service too. Skype 2.0 is free.
And finally this week, Jeff actually reviewed two great products, OmniDazzle, which is a great utility for anyone doing demonstrations on a Mac, and also, for some reason, the other one doesn't show up in my script. What was the other one that you did this week?
Let's see. Actually, give me one second, and I'll tell you.
That was an interesting moment. So everyone, while Jeff is going to look and see what the final thing on the show is supposed to be, I compiled a script from articles that we post on TMO, and for some reason, one of them didn't show up in the script. So I got to the end of this, and I prepared everything very nicely, and for some reason, Automator failed me this week. Oh, what a pity.
What a pity. Okay, actually, two other applications I reviewed this week, Seasonality 1.3.2 from Gaucho Software, which is a nice little weather tracking and monitoring application. And I also did a review of iTunes 7, and please take a look at it because I disagree with many of the other iTunes 7 reviews I've seen out there.
Right on.
And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Weekly Roundup.
Our content, as always, is written by the fine people, including you, Jeff, at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is still by Boom for TMO, and that is all that I've got this week.
And stay subscribed.
Until next week, we'll see you all online.